Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Big Bend Sentinel for July 15th. County attorney talks financial repercussions of guilty verdict in Sanchez trial by Abby Perrault. The Presidio County Commissioner's Court met Wednesday morning for the first time since a jury's verdict found Presidio County and its treasurer, Francis Garcia, had violated former county employee Katie Sanchez's First Amendment rights. In 2018, the county voted to eliminate the county office Sanchez worked in after she unsuccessfully challenged Garcia for treasurer in 2018. Providing an update following the case, County Attorney Rod Ponton explained the potential costs the county might face. The verdict would give $500,000 for past wages and other damages to Katie Sanchez and another $500,000 for future lost wages and damages to Sanchez. It also includes a $1 million assessment against Treasurer Garcia as punitive damages. All of that adds up to $2 million, which is covered by the $2 million insurance policy the county holds. But the Texas Association of Counties, who represented the county and continues to represent them in the appeals process, informed Ponton that more fees could push the county beyond its insurance policy limits. If Sanchez seeks compensation for her attorney's fees and the county is ordered to pay them, prices may end up in the ballpark of another $500,000, Ponton told commissioners. And since it would exceed the $2 million limit, the cost could land in the laps of the county taxpayers. The attorney said the county's insurance premiums are certainly going to go up, a guaranteed blow to taxpayers who foot the insurance costs every year. We don't know exactly what the financial liability would be to the county, but it likely would impact the county, including the county having to pay out of tax money. We'll just have to wait and see, Ponton said. County Judge Cinderella Guevara alleged that the TAC attorneys had not adequately informed the commissioners in executive session about the potential for attorney fees being charged to the county, nor that the verdict could ultimately exceed the county's insurance policy limits. When we had the option to settle out of court, we were never advised of that, she said. Ponton concurred, adding that the county was not advised by TAC that the verdict's dollar amount could soar that high. Addressing the treasurer, Ponton warned of potential repercussions, saying, "Ms. Garcia needs to be aware of the fact that it's up in the air whether or not the TAC policy covers the punitive part. She may have to pay that part out of her pocket." If the county ends up having to pay out of its pocket, the county will also have a claim against Ms. Garcia. Ponton called the verdict a big black eye to Presidio County, saying, "I'm really disappointed in the actions of Ms. Garcia that were proven in the federal court in Pecos." More pointedly, he recalled an incident 4 years ago when then-Commissioner Lorenzo Hernandez resigned after receiving a bribery charge for accepting a financial bribe in exchange for voting to approve a contract in Commissioner's Court. "I think Ms. Garcia should think about doing the same thing because of the terrible situations she's put Presidio County in," the attorney said. "Regardless, we're going to have to wait for the verdict to turn into a judgment and the appeals process to go out. It has certainly put Presidio County in a bad light at this point." In other county business, commissioners approved an update for the lighting ordinance, joining every city in the Tri-County in adding new provisioning that will help the area become the largest dark sky preserve under the International Dark Sky Association. The city of Marfa passed a similar ordinance update just one night earlier, becoming the final city in the Tri-County to join the effort. Bill Wren from the McDonald Observatory told commissioners that a stronger, darker skies ordinance is cost-efficient, good for recreational and scientific night sky viewing, protective of migratory bird populations, and did not statistically impact nighttime crime. I think of our dark skies as something that we take for granted, but we're very fortunate to live in an area where we can actually look and enjoy dark skies and actually see the stars, Guevara said. Commissioner Knight added, "We need to preserve what we have as much as we can." Guevara, Knight, and Cabezuela voted unanimously to pass the ordinance update, with Commissioners Eloy Aranda and Brenda Bentley absent. As the fall season nears, so does the end of the county's fiscal year. In preparation, the judge has called budget workshops that will take place Monday and Tuesday, where departments will share their wants and needs before commissioners pass a budget that will determine how taxpayers' dollars are spent in 2021 to 2022. Presidio Sheriff met with Abbott to discuss border crisis by Sachi McClendon. Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez traveled to Austin over the weekend alongside 11 other border sheriffs for another border security briefing held by Texas Governor Greg Abbott at the state capitol. At the meeting, Abbott discussed the influx of undocumented immigrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. Each of these counties are dealing with a record number of people who are coming across the border. They are the tip of the spear. They are the ones who are having to deal with immediate consequences, unlike anything we've ever seen, Abbott said in a video his office put out. Abbott was joined by Texas Department of Public Safety Director Steve McCraw, Texas Division of Emergency Management Chief Nim Kidd, and Adjutant General of Texas Tracy Norris. However, the press release related to the roundtable made no mention of personnel from Customs and Border Protection attending the meeting. Last Wednesday, the governor listed border security funding as a priority on the special legislative session that began the following day. "I called for legislation this special session to provide more border security funding for law enforcement and counties. This funding will help us better step up to meet this challenge and gives our border communities the resources and support they need," Abbott said. As the Big Bend Sentinel reported this week, the 87th special legislative session came to an abrupt halt after a majority of Texas Democratic lawmakers fled the state, leaving the House without a quorum and preventing the legislature from voting on Abbott's priority items. Brewster County Sheriff Ronnie Dodson did not attend the meeting in Austin due to a scheduling conflict. "I don't know what they talked about, but I haven't seen any action," Dodson said, in regards to the state's intervention in border security affairs. Jeff Davis County Sheriff William Bill Kitts did not make it out to Austin. Kitts could not be reached for comment. "This is the second border security meeting Abbott has hosted for local officials in Texas. On June 9th, County Judge Cinderella Guevara traveled to Del Rio to take part in the Border Security Summit, where Abbott discussed the steps his office is taking to secure our southern border and combat the ongoing humanitarian crisis. Sheriff Dominguez also attended this meeting in June. At the local level, they need more manpower in dealing with gangs that operate on both sides of the border," the governor said at the briefing over the weekend. "Bottom line is, because of the current administration's complete abandonment, they have left it to the state of Texas as well as to the counties that are represented here today to have to pick up the load of responding to the unprecedented number of people coming into our country." Dominguez did not respond to a request for comment. Oscar Carrillo, the sheriff out of Culberson, was also in attendance at the roundtable. Carrillo likewise did not respond to a request for comment. As a group of Texas Democratic lawmakers flee to D.C. to protest Republican efforts to overhaul voting rights, Representative Morales stays behind, by Sachi McClendon. A majority of Democrats from the Texas House of Representatives left the state on Monday in an attempt to block two voting restriction bills being pushed by Republicans through the special legislative session that began last Thursday. By not appearing at the legislative chambers in Austin, the dozens of Democrats left the House without a quorum, preventing the legislature from voting on Governor Greg Abbott's priority bills and effectively bringing the special session to a grinding halt. However, not every Democratic lawmaker left the state. Representative Eddie Morales, whose district covers the Tri-County and much of far west Texas, decided to stay behind in Texas. "I believe that staying to both debate and articulate my reasons for opposing the bill is the best way for me to represent my particular district," Morales said in a statement. "That said, I support the decisions of my colleagues who choose to fight this bill differently, using parliamentary procedures." The bills of issue, House Bill 3 and Senate Bill 1, would further restrict the ability for Texans to vote by limiting voting hours, banning drive-through polls, and prohibiting election officials from sending out unsolicited applications for mail-in ballots if passed into law. Rather than appearing at the legislative chambers on Monday, the group of fleeing Democrats boarded two planes to Washington, D.C., where they plan to pressure President Joe Biden and congressional lawmakers to pass federal legislation strengthening voting rights. "We are now taking the fight to our nation's capital. We are living on borrowed time in Texas. We need Congress to act now to pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to protect Texans and all Americans from the Trump Republicans' nationwide war on democracy," a group of Democrats said in a joint statement. In an interview, Representative Morales said that the GOP is trying to undermine the recent strategies developed by Harris County, the most populous county in the state, that made voting more accessible. "They're specifically targeting everything Harris County did that was successful during the pandemic," he said. "If people loved it so much, and if it's truly, really, truly an election bill of bringing more access to the citizens, why are we not making it even more easy, setting up drive-through voting, 24/7 voting, and drop boxes?" This is not the first time the Democrats have broken quorum to try and quash the GOP's voting restriction bills. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, the 87th regular legislative session came to an end on May 30th after many of the state's Democrats left the legislative chambers in a bid to kill Senate Bill 7, which mirrored the voting restriction bills currently being pushed by the state's Republican lawmakers. At the time, Morales broke away from his Democratic peers and decided to not take part in the walkout. "He did so to defend my district and defend my right to vote no on it and state my opinion. It doesn't mean we supported it, the bill, but we all stayed back to fight it and to say what needed to be said about that bill," Morales said. Obituaries from the Big Bend Sentinel for July 15th. A memorial service will be held for Mary Alice Everett Friday, August 6th at the Valentine Community Church in Valentine, Texas, at 10 a.m. Instead of flowers, Mary would have appreciated a donation in her memory to the Wounded Warriors Project, www.woundedwarriorproject.org, or the Blois Camp Meeting Association, www.bloiscampmeeting.org. Mary was preceded in death by her husband, Jim. She is survived by son, Dirk, and daughters, Marcia and Kathleen. 6 granddaughters and a great-grandson expected soon. Glenn Woody Ferris, DDS, passed away peacefully at the age of 81 from cancer in his home, Fredericksburg, Texas, on June 14th. He was born in Lafayette, Louisiana on March 21, 1940. Along with his wife, Kate, Woody is survived by his sister and brother-in-law, Carol and Larry W. Valusek of Angleton, Texas. He is also survived by brother-in-law, Dudley C. Sharp, and wife, Poochie of Houston. Brother-in-law, M. H. Palmer Muldaur, and wife Susanna of Houston. Woody is predeceased by his parents, Woodrow and Joyce Gertrude Ferris, sister Jeanelle Harper, nephews Woody, Robert, and John Harper, and godson Harry B. McMurray. Memorial contributions can be made to the charity of your choice. A celebration of his life will be held in the Texas Hill Country at a later date. Arrangements are by Shader Funeral Home of Fredericksburg, and expressions of sympathy may be sent at www.shaeter.com. Maria Virginia Hernandez, 90 years young, from Presidio, died on July 7th in Odessa. Services will be held at a later date. She was born in Presidio to Manuel and Andrea Hernandez on February 20th, 1931. Virginia is survived by her daughter, Lorraine Moreno from Austin, sister-in-law Frances Hernandez from Presidio, and several nieces and nephews, grandnieces and grandnephews, and cousins. Virginia was preceded in death by her parents, sister Aurora Hinojos, brother Ruben Hernandez, brother-in-law Jesus Hinojos, nephew Jesse Hinojos, and son-in-law Joe Saldana. Online condolences may be left at www.alpinememorialfuneralhome.com. Susan Phillips Pruitt, 80, of San Marcos, passed away on Saturday, July 3rd. She was born in Houston to Richard and Virginia Brock Phillips on July 27, 1940. She married Robert R. Pruitt in 1966, and she was by his side until he passed in 2018. Susan is survived by her children, Angela Harrisberger of New Braunfels, Ben Pruitt and wife Deidre of Bergheim, and Gina Pruitt of San Marcos, and her two loving grandchildren. Contributions in Susan's memory can be made to San Marcos Regional Animal Shelter at www.sanmarcostx.gov/256/donate-2-the-shelter or via phone at 512-805-2657. Joe E. Skelton of Alpine passed away on July 10th after a long illness. He was born in Pecos on May 15th, 1943, to Raymond and Rose Ellen Skelton. Those left who cherish his love and memory include his precious wife, Richie Skelton of Alpine, brothers Ross Skelton and wife Debbie of Alpine, R.D. Skelton and wife Norita of Amarillo, sister Lee Daugherty, and husband Delton of Fort Davis, daughters Jacqueline Robinius and husband Mike of Mansfield, and Raylan Skelton of College Station. 8 grandchildren and 1 great-grandson, nieces and nephews, and many more extended family. Memorial services were held Tuesday, July 20th. Arrangements were entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Edwina D. Wilcox, 100, passed away on Tuesday, July 6th. She was born on October 8, 1920, to Cinderella Martinez and Juan E. Dominguez. Edwina is survived by son Charlie Frank Wilcox, son William John Wilcox, daughter Lyra May Wilcox Duran, and daughter Rose Wilcox. Edwina was preceded in death by her father and mother, brother Fidel Dominguez, brother Ruben Dominguez, brother Manuel Dominguez, brother Abel Dominguez, sister Eloria Sotillo, sister Nora Palanez, stepmother Esther Dominguez, daughter Cinderella Wilcox, and brother-in-law Joe G. Wilcox. Mrs. Wilcox also leaves behind 10 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. A vigil for Edwina was held July 12th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Marfa, and a funeral mass followed with a burial at Cementerio de la Merced in Marfa. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.hillcrestfuneralhomeeast.com for the Wilcox family. Democratic Attorney General candidate hits 8 campaign stops out west by Abby Perrault. Spring primaries and November 2022 general elections are still off in the distance, but in West Texas, one candidate is already hitting the campaign trail. Last week, Joe Jaworski visited 8 local cities on his West Texas swing, hoping to shore up support for his bid to become the next Attorney General of Texas. Jaworski's 2-day tour met constituents at campaign stops in Pecos, Fort Stockton, Alpine, Marfa, Van Horn, Presidio, Terlingua, and Marathon, answering attendees' questions and sharing ideas from his platform. The former Galveston City Council member, former mayor, and longtime trial lawyer said that if elected into state office, he would stop the current AG's practice of filing frivolous lawsuits, become a figurehead for the legalization of recreational cannabis, and offer his office's support to local governments. Your local government cares about you, your mayors, your county judges, your school superintendents. And right now, the GOP leadership is in an ideological battle with local control, Jaworski told residents during his campaign stop in Marfa. Local control is something that Republicans use to promote as part of their ideology, and they have long abandoned it. In the Tri-County area, counties and cities had power wrested from their hands just last year when the governor created coronavirus-related ordinances that superseded local ones. The current administration has also limited local ordinances elsewhere. If you want to have a plastic bag ban in Corpus Christi, or if you want to limit aggregate mining in Kerr County because you're worried about the purity of the Guadalupe River, or if you want to do any other innovation on voting like Harris County did, and it's not black-letter law legal, have at it. I'll have your back because I'm a former mayor and I understand the incubator innovation that local government brings. Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for July 15th. Apache and Alamo Realign Grade Levels by Nathan Hewer. Starting this upcoming school year, the Alamo and Apache elementary schools in Fort Stockton will have distinct grade levels. Previously, both campuses featured pre-kindergarten through third grade classrooms, but after Monday's special school board meeting, that no longer is the case. It's academic-driven, Fort Stockton ISD Superintendent Dr. Gabriel Zamora said of his decision to realign the campuses. A big portion of this is the curriculum directors we're bringing into the district now will be able to focus on second grade at one campus and third grade at one campus instead of having to shuffle in between. Zamora presented the realignment plan to school board members at Monday's special meeting, a gathering that was necessary to get the ball rolling on the shift before the school year starts. Of the 5 board members that were at the meeting, 4 voted in favor of the motion to realign the campuses, and 1 voted against. Freddie Martinez voted against the motion, while School Board President Billy Espino and board members Anastasio Dominguez, Andy Rivera, Flo Garcia voted to approve the movement. Board members Ursula Sanchez and Sandra Rivera were not present. Martinez's vote against the realignment derived from the time frame in which the decision was made. I think it's too fast. Give the parents time to think about it, he said. We're moving on with it really fast, though. I don't agree with it. Zamora stated after Monday's meeting that the timeliness of the move will be a non-issue for the district as plans have already been set in motion to make the move for teachers from one campus to another an easy transition. We'll move the things in a couple of days when we get to it, and our plan is to execute it, Zamora said. We're going to bring in reinforcements in the form of coaches and possibly some of our strong football players that we're going to hire on to help us get those different things moving. It's not a mountain of stuff. We're not moving desks and things like that. It's just some of the books, things like that. When we bring in the reinforcements, we'll get it done quickly. I like the idea, Andy said. I was talking to a few people and it was clicking that in intermediate, you've got your Apache guys and your Alamo guys. It turns into Apache versus Alamo. Before Zamora decided to present the realignment plan to the school board, the new superintendent talked to the principals at each campus and administrators across the board. That was followed by communication with teachers and extensive research into how the realignment could ultimately boost the academic performance of students in the future. I think the main thing is that it was extremely well thought out, that the principals themselves were involved in the process. A lot of this is as I walked to campuses and talked to different personnel, looking at it objectively, Zamora explained. I just want to relay that to the community, and I want to relay that all of my decisions, all of my recommendations, are based on the betterment of our kids, the development of our staff with the best interest in mind for Fort Stockton ISD. City Council commits funds for a recreation study by Nathan Hewer. The second of three financial commitments needed to complete the new recreational facility study was approved on Tuesday at the Fort Stockton City Council meeting. Recreation Board Director Ruby Bernal requested $7,000 from the city for the study that is set to be a joint venture between the county, city, and school district. The plan is to get this going so we can get the plans for the rec facility. We are asking for $7,000 so we can put in as one of the entities to get the plans ready to go, she said. The City Council approved the request unanimously with minimal discussion. City Councilman Paul Casillas gave some context to the Council on the future project. The rec board at our June meeting decided that we should, as an interlocal board, that each entity contribute $7,000 so we can get this study done, he said. The county has already approved their portion, so now it's our time to approve our portion of it. While the school board has yet to officially approve their portion, Dr. Gabriel Zamora stated on Tuesday that the district has funds to contribute their portion. The school board could not approve their portion at Monday's school special school board because it was not a regular meeting. Zamora stated it's something the board will vote on at their regular meeting on July 26th. Obituaries from the Fort Stockton Pioneer. Jose H. Hernandez, 88, of Fort Stockton, was called by the Lord on July 11th. He was born March 19, 1933, in the state of Hidalgo, Mexico. Jose was preceded in death by his wife Lupita. He is survived by his children Jose Luis Hernandez of Grapevine, Irma and husband Ernie Taylor of Midland, and Mary I. and husband Alex Pacheco and Norma and husband Tony Munoz, both of Fort Stockton. 9 grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. 3 step-grandchildren. 3 step-great-grandchildren. Visitation was held July 14th with a rosary at Eternity Funeral Home Chapel. Mass was celebrated Thursday, July 15th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with Father Francis Njoku officiating. Burial followed at Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements were under Eternity Funeral Home. K. Diane Ness Wilson, 72, passed away May 26th in her home in Floydada, Texas. She was born January 14th, 1949, to Don and Mildred Ness, or Ness, capital K-N-E-S-S, in Kane, Pennsylvania. She was preceded in death by her parents. Kay is survived by her husband of 31 years, Ron Wilson, her daughter, Michelle Gonzalez of Fort Stockton, 2 granddaughters, her brother, Larry Ness, and wife, Nancy of Hazelhurst, Pennsylvania, and many cousins, nieces, and nephews. A memorial service was held Saturday, July 17th at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Fort Stockton. Elidia Pacheco Cervantes was born on March 25, 1938, in Fort Stockton to Natalio and Katerina Pacheco. Elidia married the love of her life, Leo Cervantes, on December 25, 1963. They had three children, Evelyn Curbo and husband Bruce, Ninfa Preti and husband Mike, and Edward Cervantes and wife Janie. She had three granddaughters and three grandsons, and great-grandchildren. She is survived by her husband of 57 years and her sister, Eloidia Baeza of Fort Stockton.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, July 15th. Keep the hospital where it is, CEO says. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The Ward Memorial Board of Managers authorized CEO Leticia Rodriguez to request the county commissioners to enlarge patient rooms during last Thursday's regular meeting. Currently, the bathrooms are very small and not ADA compliant. The existing bathrooms already extend slightly beyond the exterior wall, and the proposed modification would extend the bathrooms even further to increase the amount of space in each bathroom and make them ADA compliant. Quote, I think a better course is to continue to upgrade and renovate the current hospital instead of building a new hospital. We have a new modern ER and radiology department and will soon have a completely remodeled physical therapy clinic. To me, it makes more sense to continue to upgrade the existing hospital so that everything, Sandhills Clinics, PT building, specialty clinics, and hospital are all near each other instead of spending millions of dollars for a new location somewhere else. End quote. Managers present for the meeting were Dr. John Fawcett, Tommy Escamilla, Angel Fuentes, Larry Hunt, Frank Heslin, Gerald Carlson, and Lisa Stewart. Manager Jeff Burdick was not present. Material shortages continued to delay completion of the physical therapy clinic. Material for the awnings have still not been received, but the sliding doors, lighting, switches, programming, and the swimming pool were expected to be completed this week. The expected completion is still expected to be mid-August, Rodriguez said. In other business, the managers approved renewal of the employee health insurance plan. Coverages of the plan will remain the same, but the cost will increase by 3.9%, which will be an additional $51,000 for the year. The hospital pays 77% of the premium, with the employee paying the remaining 23%. Council allocates HOT funds. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan City Council met in regular session on Tuesday afternoon and approved the allocation of the 2019-2020 Hotel Motel Occupancy Tax Funds. Funding available in the HOT to begin the new fiscal year is around $2.2 million. The council heard requests from Chamber of Commerce Director Teresa Burnett and Ward County Judge Greg Holly for the Million Barrel Museum and Ward County Event Center during the last council meeting. Burnett told the council that her proposed budget was about the same as last year's budget in consideration of diminished expected hotel occupancies with last year's crash in oil field activity along with the COVID-19 restrictions. The chamber requested approximately $160,000, which included money to partially offset administration expenses, as well as for advertising and support of events, bringing new events to town, and help grow the community. Holly submitted a request of $400,000 for the event center and an additional $50,000 for the museum complex. The council approved the allocation of funding for the fiscal year as follows, up to $50,000 for the museum complex, Ward County, up to $161,000 to the Monahan's Chamber of Commerce, up to $1,000 for the airport fly-in, up to $10,000 for sundry administration, $50,000 for special projects, meetings, $12,000 for City of Monahans, utilities for a million-barrel museum, $40,000 for City of Monahans' existing sports facilities and fields, and $418,000 for the multi-purpose event center infrastructure and activities. Quote, we've budgeted $363,000 in HOT revenue for the fiscal year and have allocated $743,000, which would leave a balance of $1.9 million if every penny of the allocated funds were spent, City Manager Rex Thee said. The balance of the hotel-motel tax fund ending June 30th is $2.1 million. Along with Thee, Mayor Adam Steen and City Councilman Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Rudy Hernandez, Calvin Carroll were all in attendance. Councilman Ivy Valenzuela was absent. In regular business, a public hearing has been set regarding the proposed 2021-2022 city budget for August 10th at 3 p.m. in the council chambers at City Hall. A copy of the proposed budget can be inspected at City Hall within 10 business days of the public hearing or viewed online on the City of Monahans website. New gates at diversion dam put rainwater into reservoir. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. For the first time in several years, Imperial Reservoir is not dry, thanks to recent rains and a new set of gates at the diversion dam, which can divert water from the Pecos River into the reservoir. Imperial Reservoir is a catchment maintained by Pecos County Water Improvement District No. 2, located just south of the Ward County line and about 15 miles west of Cayonosa. Up until a few years ago, the reservoir was open to the public for boating and recreation, but a lack of water and a lack of management saw it closed. The dearth of water was caused by the combination of a lack of demand by Pecos County farmers for Red Bluff irrigation water, which was first impounded in the reservoir, and the deterioration of the diversion dam, which allowed excess rainwater flowing down the Pecos River to be diverted into the reservoir. Quote, in the past, a lot of the water that filled Imperial Reservoir was actually rainwater, Jay Lee said in a January meeting of the Red Bluff Water, Power, and Control District meeting. Lee is the president of the Red Bluff Board. At the time, the board was discussing the ongoing project of refurbishing the diversion dam. The reservoir is part of the irrigation water system maintained by Red Bluff and its member water districts. For several years, the gates on the dam were nearly inoperable, so that a backhoe was needed to open a gate, meaning that it was no quick and easy task to open a gate when there was some rain falling between Red Bluff and the reservoir to be caught. The result was that much of any rain falling between Red Bluff Lake near the New Mexico state line and Imperial Reservoir simply flowed downriver. With the new gates, it is just a matter of sending a ditch rider down to the dam to open or close the gates as needed, Pruitt said. Quote, we have had the gates open in the hopes of catching some rain, and we caught some, Robin Pruitt, general manager for Red Bluff, said. While the reservoir is far from full, the past few weeks are a good start, she said. The recent rains also fell in areas that benefit Red Bluff Lake. According to Pruitt, Red Bluff gained better than 30,000 acre-feet of water during the past few weeks. Quote, we had 68,000 before it started raining and are holding at least 100,000 after this weekend, Pruitt said. Most of the canyons and rivers that feed into Red Bluff ran water recently, Pruitt said, including Dark Canyon and the Delaware and Black Rivers. Pruitt was hopeful that the fresh water would also help dilute the lake water, which was carrying as much as a 7-ton per acre-foot salt load. Quote, "The farmers can use it on alfalfa, but the less salt, the better," Pruitt said. Earlier in the year, the Red Bluff Board voted not to offer water allotments to any but established farming operations this year, given the low level of the lake. Pruitt said the additional water would allow them to release water now, although it may be too late in the year for any farming use to be made of it. Quote, "It will be there next year, or a lot of it will be," she said. While Red Bluff was built to hold 300,000 acre-feet, the lake is limited to 140,000 acre-feet at the moment, as the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality required the spillway gates to either be jammed open or rebuilt a year ago. To this point, Red Bluff has not had the funds to rebuild the gates, so they remain jammed open, limited the lake to 147,000 acre-feet capacity. During recent meetings, the board has moved forward with plans to rehabilitate the spill gates. Commissioners approved new software for JP offices. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County Commissioners, meeting in a short regular session on Monday morning, approved an agreement with NetData for software and collection services for the Justices of the Peace. The new software will provide improved efficiency for activities such as JP case management, vision imaging, payment systems, ticket citation upload, and more. The agreement is valid for 3 years and will cost $19,700, due within 60 days of contract execution, and an initial year maintenance charge of $18,500. In the absence of County Judge Craig Holly, Commissioner Eddie Nelms presided over the meeting. Commissioners Tino Sanchez and Dexter Nichols were also in attendance. Commissioner Larry Hanna was not present. In other action, the commissioners appointed the Office of County Tax Assessor Collector Vicki Heflin to calculate the no new revenue tax rate and voter approval tax rate. Heflin explained that the no new revenue tax rate was formerly known in past years as the effective tax rate, and the voter approval tax rate was formerly known as the rollback tax rate, or the rate at which would require voter approval before being implemented. The commissioners acknowledged an order from the 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swanson setting the salary for the county auditor and assistant auditors, effective January 1, 2022. The salary for auditor Ellen Fryer was set at $100,000 plus travel and expenses at no less than $5,500 per year, $3,700 for necessary operating and office supply expense, and $1,350 for telephone expense. Shots fired from rifle near Holmes leads to two arrests. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Two men have been arrested on multiple charges after a rifle was discharged in the 700 block of Kenneth Street late last Wednesday evening. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, "Dispatch received a call from someone in the 900 block of South Kenneth Street in reference to shots fired in the area around 9:51 p.m. Wednesday, July 7th. When officers arrived, they located four males, Zachary Hartfield, Kendawana Carthen Jr., Lyricus Coleman, and Brandon Blackwell, who told them they fled the home at 707 South Kenneth after two other men were in an altercation, which resulted in one of the men shooting off a rifle," end quote. Officer Xavier Ramon and Christopher Guzman located a spent rifle casing in front of 707 South Kenneth. While searching for the suspect related to the shooting incident, officers located Kalunda Keon Clayton, who was intoxicated at the time. He was subsequently arrested and charged with public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. After fleeing the home on Kenneth, the suspect identified as Brandon Connor hid the rifle in the alley behind 703 South James Street, then entered a residence in the 600 block of Ike Street. According to Scanner, an additional 911 call was made in reference to Connor entering the home of 606 South Ike and telling the resident of the home, quote, he was running from the cops, end quote. Connor was detained at the home on Ike by officers and later taken to Ward Memorial Hospital to be treated for a cut on his hand. During the course of the investigation, it was learned Connor and another man, Jeffrey Page, were in a physical altercation outside the home over the rifle, which resulted in Connor shooting the weapon, Quintana said. Connor was arrested and taken to Ward County Jail on charges of criminal trespass, a Class B misdemeanor, and deadly conduct discharged firearm, a third-degree felony. Connor's bond was set at $3,000 for the criminal trespass and $15,000 for the deadly conduct charge. He remains in custody in lieu of posting the $18,000 bond. Clayton's bond was set at $3,000. He posted bond and was released. Clayton's offense can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of not more than 10 years or less than 2 years, and a fine not to exceed $10,000.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.